Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Project MedTech. I'm the founder of Project MedTech, Dwayne Mancini. If you need anything from us or would like to suggest a future guest, you can email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. And you can always visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, or follow us on LinkedIn. My guest today is Jan Bergensteinsen, founder and vice president of global business development at Smart Trial. In this episode, Jan and I discuss the issue of clinical data collection in the medical device development pathway, the lack of clinical data for products in the market, the need for balance between innovation and safety, why you need to think about clinical data early, why sales and marketing need to have a heavy influence in your clinical data collection, how the MDR is affecting innovation in Europe, and more. So without further ado, my discussion with Jan Bergensteinsen.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Boom. Jan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Great. Yes. I'm happy to have you on. So I mentioned you're with Smart Trial now, but maybe just a brief background into to who you are and how you got to here and then what you guys are up to at Smart Trial.
Sure. That's a very good question. So I actually got into, somewhat stumbled into the clinical trials industry. What was it? 11 years ago, a little bit more than a decade.
Okay.
Where I was working as a data entry specialist in clinical trials at one of these sites here in Denmark. I'm actually originally born in Iceland, and I moved to Denmark almost 15 years ago to study. Okay. And during my studies, I got to learn about clinical trials and how they were being conducted within the pharmaceutical industry. And I was lucky enough to get a chance to actually be working with in the data collection part of a clinical trial for a couple of years. Fast forward to 2013, I founded the company Smart Trial together with two of my colleagues. And since then, I've been dedicating my career in assisting medical device companies, simplifying and optimizing their clinical data collection.
Okay. So,
and
I was just going to ask, yeah, like, real quick, so why the switch from pharma to strictly device?
That is a good question, because there is a certain event that happened in that particular period of time that influenced a lot of that change for me personally, but also in generally for the industry. I believe it was somewhere around 2010 or 11, there were news breaking out that a lot of medical device manufacturers were having trouble with safety reporting of the devices out there in the market. And around 2012-13, the European Union actually suggested and created a draft for a new regulation for medical devices, the MDR, as we know today, and the IVDR as well for in vitro diagnostics. And at that time, we could see that there was a clear issue or clear challenge with the fact that device companies hadn't been collecting enough data at that time point. And now there's this new regulation suggesting that suddenly everybody is supposed to collect clinical data. And with our background within this part of the industry, us having sat in front of the computer doing data entry transcriptions within clinical trials, we saw that there was a need to provide something that was designed and more in line with what the medtech industry was in need of.
Okay. Okay. Great. Sorry for the interruption. So you dedicate your life to the MedTech and Smart Trial now. So what does Smart Trial do?
So I've always had a great interest in clinical informatics in general. When I came to, you know, learn about electronic data capture, clinical data collection, and clinical trials, and how complex of a challenge that is in reality. I came kind of obsessed with the fact that there must be a way to do that in better means. So, so when we started the journey with Smart Trial, we realized that there was really nothing out there that was simple enough to enable medical device companies themselves to manage and collect their own data.
Okay.
So that's really what drove us into this.
Into this space.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So let's talk about that current problem, right? Of med tech companies not having the tools they need to collect enough clinical data. Is there some underlying issue there? I mean, there's no question, right, that there's minimal data, clinical data collected on medical devices, right? Like, I think that's a pretty well-known problem. So is there a reason, like, I mean, or is there a thesis or a hypothesis to why that is?
I mean, I'm coming from the other side of the Atlantic, so I get a chance to look at the US market with my eyes. And then what I've seen so far is that a lot of the medical device development that has been going on in the world for the past two or three decades has been focused on getting devices to the market in the US. And the regulatory pathway in the US is, I'm not going to say flawed, but there are ways to get, you know, to market without having to collect a lot of data, which is a little bit in you know, if you look at the pharmaceutical market, a whole different challenge there, because you know, when you're getting a pill to the market, you need to go through, you know, preclinical research, phase 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so forth. But when it comes to the medical device industry, there are different ways to get to market, right? Some of those ways, they might enforce and require you to collect a lot of data, others don't. And that used to be the case in Europe as well. You have had a chance to get products, medical device products, to the market in Europe and in the US through equivalents or, you know, something like 510K, where you can, you know, thoroughly document that your device is as safe and as effective as another one that has already been placed to market by, you know, showing some kind of evidence or documentation of to support that. That has allowed medical device companies to put products to market without having to collect a lot of data. And if you think about it, it is, well, I'd say it is a little bit scary, because devices are a lot more complex when it comes to usability and application and practice versus what you see, for example, with pharmaceuticals. So I believe a lot of the, well, probably one of the biggest reasons to why we, the medical device industry, hasn't collected as much data as we maybe should have or could have, is because of the fact that the regulation has allowed us to. And I've had multiple meetings with medical device companies that have had products put place to market, you know, that have developed medical devices for decades. And when I speak to regulatory affairs experts within those organizations, they don't really care about the device itself. What they really care about is to provide the documentation that they need to produce in order to help the company get the product to market. There is a humanistic factor in there that, you know, drives them in making sure that everything they do is high quality, safe, and, you know, according to the regulation. But if the regulation is not, you know, up to that standard that we need in terms of safety, the regulatory people that are responsible to produce all these documents don't see a reason why they should. Okay. I don't know. Is that what do you think?
No, that makes sense. It makes sense. I'm trying to get, I have my opinions, right, on that as well. And I think that that is, you know, there's we've talked about it on the podcast a few times, but it is a weird thing that a lot of products on the market don't have any clinical data. That's weird, right? Like it's even post-market, right? They don't have post-market data in some cases. So it's concerning, right? For sure.
Yeah.
And I think that there's this balance of innovation and safety, that there's a fine line, right? There's some things that, if you go too far, you're going to stunt innovation. If you don't go far enough, you're going to lack safety standards, and there's a happy medium. And I think that they need to figure that, you know, all geographical areas are going to have to figure that out. Right.
Yeah. And
yeah,
I think one of the biggest challenges is also the fact that the US is and probably will continue to be one of the biggest medical device markets in the world.
Right.
Then you have Asia, Europe, you know, very close behind on that matter. But
mm-hmm.
when you have a regulatory environment with in such a big of a market that, well, doesn't support that cause or is having trouble in finding that fine line, it opens up for loopholes.
Right.
So I guess what many companies have had to do, and maybe that's not because they would like to. I'm sure that a lot of the CEOs out there or founders of the medical device companies would love to have conducted clinical trials to actually show what they believe and think the product is capable of is actually right. true. But then it's always a question about money, right? So
always.
If you don't have the funds to do it, and if you have a loophole to go through, which enables you to get the product to market, I don't blame them.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone wants to get to their product to market as quickly as possible. Right. Which,
true.
You know, in some cases I do caution people that it's not always the best idea, right? There is every medical device startup for the most part, assuming that 90% of medical innovation, at least in the US, is 510Ks, which means by definition, they're me too products, right? They're slightly better yeah. than the next thing. You're going to have to face the valley of death, which is actually selling your product. And it's a lot harder than people think, right? Like there's way more behind that than just, well, I'm going to be successful. I'm going to sell this. And you run into some serious hurdles when you make those assumptions like that, right? So mm-hmm. clinical data can be big there to help you sell. It's just whether,
oh yeah,
you know, whether you're actually collecting it or not, because it is costly sometimes. I mean, everything comes down to money, right? But mm-hmm. it's important to do.
It's when we're talking about money. I saw this report, I think it was a year ago or 2 years ago, from Medtech Europe. And they were talking about how much of your total company budget is actually spent on RA and QA. And I believe that it was everywhere from 5 to 12% or something like that. And now, because of the MDR, that's probably going to be doubled up in terms of, you know, allocating more resources to be able to conduct all these new activities that will have to be done. And if we look at the US, I'm sure that the percentage of funds placed on Q&R is probably very similar.
Yeah.
A lot of the money is placed on development, maintenance, you know, and sales. And that's,
right.
you know, that's understandable.
Yeah. And I think to your point though, clinical will eventually, and it already is in some strategics, being looped into sales, right? So clinical data is being looped into commercialization, which makes total sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just collecting that data in an efficient way, a smart way, and making sure you get what you need, right?
Yeah,
is really important. So I think we've kind of laid out the problem, and you and I had talked a little bit before this, right? Of what the issue is and minimal data being collected. You know, we just covered, you know, percent of investment in RA and RA and QA is kind of low. So but
there is another factor to it as well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of getting back to my point in the beginning of our conversation, that there's been a hole in the market for, in terms of service for medical device companies when it comes to data collection. Most, if not all, of the medical device companies that have been collecting data to date, because they have high risk class devices, they've been, you know, enforced to conduct post-market activities because of their, you know, high class devices. They have been using what we call pharmaceutical-based data collection tools. And these tools and services are usually designed, if not always, designed and offered in the same standard as you would do for a pharmaceutical company. So with that said, knowing that 97% of the medical device industry being small and medium enterprises, only the 3% really have had the funds to use these tools. So data collection has been driven by, you know, how much money do you have to spend on it? And that also leads back to the tools and services that you use to collect the data. And what we realized was that there was really no solution that was particularly designed for medical devices to, in that regard, which is why we have been, you know, offering these data collection services that are specifically designed for the different medical device activities, such as, you know, PMCF and post-market activities as well, to enable these smaller, medium enterprises and the rest of the medical device industry to collect these data.
Yeah, and I think to your point too, for people who don't know the differences between the industries, which I think every med tech person pretty much probably does, but in terms of like breaking down, let's just break down a startup in med tech, right? When you see a startup in med tech raise a Series A round, generally, and this is general, 10 million is probably pretty good. You know, 20 million, you're like, wow, they raised a really big Series A. In pharma, people, they don't even bat an eye unless you raised 100 million in a Series A round, right? I mean, it's insane. You see these Series A's that are 60, 70, $80 million. So if you just take that example, right, and assume that there's some correlation there, you know, that's 3 to 4, 5, sometimes 10 times larger in pharma, which means if we're using pharma tools, that's way too expensive for the device clients, right? So that's a really good point. Could we also, the problem of not collecting clinical data, we've talked about all these issues for a med tech company, but we haven't talked about the most obvious, and that's risk to patients, safety, ineffective products, right? You want to touch on that a little bit?
That's true. It's interesting how you don't, how that really didn't, you know, come first up in my mind when you actually think about it, because that's actually really what it's all about.
It should be so obvious. It should be so obvious, right? And you know?
And I think with, I don't know, you might've seen the Netflix movie, the documentary on Netflix, Bleeding Edge. That movie really pictured it quite well to the public, what can possibly happen if you don't have enough information to support your efficacy. And not saying that the companies that in that, you know, particular documentary were doing something wrong necessarily, they might have been, you know, have good intentions and all that. But what is, you know, in the end, there is a patient that's going to have a medical device either implanted or it's going to be used in application of their clinical pathway. And if that device is used wrong, or not designed correctly, or I don't know, something else that could impact the how it's used in clinical practice, there is a person that's going to get hurt possibly. And the possibility, the factors at play are just so many, because if you think about it, a pill, not saying that everybody knows how to take a pill and it's easy, but I would say that it's probably 90% easier to take a pill rather than how to use a, you know, some kind of an implantable device that's going to be put inside the body. If you're taking a pill, you usually just can do it yourself. If you're going to get implanted with something, you need a physician. You might even need an expert trainer from the medical device company to assist with the procedure. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have to try out different means and methods and all that. And, you know, there are so many factors that are at play. And all of that has to do with patient safety. Again, how safe is it really? Because efficacy is always number two. If you talk about high-risk class devices, it's always about safety first. Safety first before you talk about any efficacy at all. Is it safe to use? So in my opinion, this should be one of the crucial and the foundational reasons to why you should collect clinical data. Because you can't sell if you can't show if it's safe. Mm-hmm. You can sell it if it's not effective, because you can sell. It's easy to sell. But if it's not safe, nobody will ever use it.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, I think this brings me back to a point, you know, a lot of people will go do first in man studies in some South American countries, some other areas across the globe that maybe don't have the kind of healthcare that we have in the US or Europe. And while I understand that on some occasions, there have been some times where I've talked to a leader of a company who, when I've asked, you know, why do you want to do the study there? Because there are good reasons to do it. There's also bad reasons. And when I hear, well, it's easier, you know, I don't need to do as much biocompatibility, or I don't need to do as much animal testing before I go there. That's a red flag for me, right? As just like a, generally as a human being, I don't want to work with that person, because if you, and I asked them the question, if your mom or dad, sister, brother, wife, husband, anyone, right? If they were sick, would you say, yeah, you could use that product? Or would you go, I don't know, we haven't really vetted it out as well as I'd like. If that's the, if you're on the set, if you're on the ladder, you shouldn't be putting that on anybody, right? I mean, that's just like a good moral compass, right? So for those kind of people, it's like, for me, I'm like, stay out of the med tech space. Okay. Like, we're a tight knit community. We all are marching towards, you know, a little better. We're all here for the right reasons. So that's a big concern for me. And you just brought that up, and it made me think of that, as I have had that happen on one or two occasions.
I guess another problem to that might also be the fact that investors in medtech are a little bit different from what you see in pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. Investors in medtech are oftentimes people that don't even have medical device experience, especially angel investors. You can get money from everywhere, especially if you're looking to raise, you know, small money in the beginning. And if you're getting the wrong money from the wrong people with no experience behind them, who are going to be leading you towards that pathway of, you know, doing it cheap, easy, fast, you're going to end up with a bad product. Mm-hmm. And I guess when it comes to investments, that is probably a huge influence as well, to have, find the right people with the right appropriate experience that can at least guide you away from that if you're heading towards the wrong path. Mm-hmm. And I've seen cases of, you know, companies around our city here in Denmark, or also in the Nordics, where, you know, angel investors have invested in, you know, crazy medical device based technologies. Neither the investor or the founders knew that it actually should have been governed by medical device regulations. And I've seen multiple cases of where the product was almost placed to market, where it had been stopped because they didn't follow the regulatory pathway correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. Look.
And that's just money down the drain.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a good point, right? Is if you are a entrepreneur in the med tech space and you're raising capital, there is something there. It is true. Good money, like smart money and bad money and neutral money. And you've got to be careful with some of that bad money. And it could make a huge difference early on. Because if you don't, if you don't know the space and you don't set your expectations about an investor, and they're a first time med tech investor, you have to make them aware this is a regulated industry. Whatever you're giving to me, there's no, like, you're not getting this out right away. There's no, I'm not paying this back. Like, I'm not going to be generating revenue day one, right? So there's no distribution. Like, I'm not paying you a dividend. Like, they need to be aware of all these things. And it's advantageous for you as the entrepreneur to educate them right off the bat, so that you set those expectations, so they don't try to pull their money. They don't try to do these various things, because if, you know, they do that, that could really hurt. And if someone's pulling money from your investment, you're not getting other investments unless you have a very good story behind that. So you brought up a good point. I just wanted
to touch
on
it.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, you know, we've set the stage, problem, issues. The industry obviously needs to go to collecting more clinical data. How do we get there? How do we solve this issue? Because we've talked about a number of things, right? Oh. So some of these things are easy to solve of why we need to do it, right? We've talked about the problem, but how do we do it? How do we make it more cost effective? How do we collect more clinical data pre and post approval, right?
Oh, that's $1 million question, and I don't have a real answer to that, and I'm not even saying that, you know, what we're doing at Smart Trial is even close to being the solution to that problem, because if you think about it, clinical data collection is just one big soup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to make that soup taste good, you need the salt and pepper and all the other ingredients. And what we're doing is probably just, you know, offering you some of the base spices and, you know, the starting point. The most challenging task is not to actually find the appropriate vendor or service provider or to have the, you know, most beautiful design protocol. The biggest challenge is definitely the execution of it, because one of the things that I've seen medical device companies do a lot of that increases their expenditure on clinical investigations, enormously, is collecting too much information, wanting to do too much with what they have to do. We see that firsthand because we often use, you know, SmartShore offers the data collection platform that they use to gather the information. And we're seeing small companies ending up with data sets that are, you know, equal to, you know, some of the, you know, phase 1-2 trials in pharmaceuticals. I'm not saying that medical device companies can't do that or can't require that, but when you're doing a first in human, you don't have to think about, you know, covering every single possible aspect of how that, you know, device was used or what the user thinks of the device by answering a 50 question questionnaire. Because when you do that, you end up with a lot of overhead in terms of monitoring, maintenance, and you know, quality assurance. You probably burn your sites and investigators out, even patients as well. And you end up with a huge data set that you don't really know what to do with because you always have to have somebody to analyze on it as well.
Oh, think about the cost of a biostatistician, a biostats person. Oh my goodness.
Exactly.
That's expensive. So,
you know, there's a lot of factors that come into play to make it more effective. That's definitely one of them. Another one is to think about clinical data early. And like we talked, like you said earlier, clinical data probably needs to come into the sales part of the company because that's really where the strategy, your clinical strategy is born. Mm-hmm. Your marketing and sales should be driving your clinical strategy. Yep. It should be the commercialization of the product that should be the focus of your endpoints. And that's often done in the opposite manner. You think of the clinical trial first and you try to come up with, you know, things that you believe are relevant to look at in terms of efficacy and safety. And then when you get to market and the physician asks you, so how did it go with that parameter? You know what? I actually didn't know. We didn't collect it in the study. Okay, so why not? You know, that's what we do. That's what we use as standard in our clinical practice. And, you know, most of my other colleagues do as well. You know, how did you not do that?
Yeah.
It just gives you an idea of that the medical device isn't mature enough and they didn't have the right, you know, people sitting at the right spots in the company. So, you know, that's, again, money down the drain.
Yeah, right. And that hurts. And
the protocol might have been perfect, but, you know, just that one parameter that nobody thought of because nobody thought of asking the user.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, something that a former colleague and mentor of mine, Tim Blair, he's been a guest on the podcast a few times. You know, we were talking to a startup the other day who had reached out for some advice, right? And so we got on the phone with them, we're talking through, and, you know, he said, I've talked to so many, you know, end users, physicians, patients about what's important to them. And Tim had brought up a good point. And he said, you know, you should talk to some of the salespeople for some of your strategics, like some of the competitors that you plan to sell this against. Why don't you talk to some of those sales folks to figure out, you know, what do they see? Like, what are the biggest things doctors are asking them? Because they're probably going to ask you the same thing, right? So sometimes it's good to, you know, get their opinion on that, or at least what they're seeing, so that you can collect those kind of endpoints. And to your point, you know, this should be a, you know, fall in the same bucket as sales, because mm-hmm. I've read all the data points you're collecting, your sales folks are going to use when they're out trying to sell this product. So it's a really good point.
And another huge factor is, of course, and I can't leave without saying it, collecting data digitally is the only way to go from now on.
Yeah.
There are still startups out there that we have, you know, discussions with because they're reaching out to us asking for, you know, quotes and information how they could use SmartTrawl in their studies. And they tell us that they're evaluating it against using paper and Excel. And there are, you know, it's I totally get that. That's what's been done in the past because what we have been offered is too expensive and we can't afford it. So we just go back to paper. But now actually the regulation is changing. And one of the standards that has been adopted in the US as well and Europe and internationally is the new ISO standard for good clinical practice for conducting clinical investigations with medical devices. In that particular standard, there was a specific update where it clearly states that if you're going to use some kind of data collection tool, it has to be validated. I'm not saying the paper cannot be validated, but if you're going to fulfill all the requirements in that standard, using paper is going to kill your budget. And if you're going to be using Excel, it's potentially it could be declined because of lack of validation and potential, you know, erroneous data being inside of your data set somewhere because you didn't provide the necessary checks and validation that you needed on your data set. And we're seeing cases where startup companies, especially, this is especially popular among startup companies, where they've started out using paper and then migrated to digital solution because they might have, you know, grown, you know, key opinion leaders in other states or countries, and they might have, you know, started multi-center studies. And then when you start a multi-center study with a paper-based tool, oh, there's going to be a lot of overhead in terms of travel, queue, and all of that. So they migrate to a digital tool, but doing that becomes very expensive because then you're suddenly trying to force paper designed study into the digital world, which is another huge issue. And I don't even have time to talk about that today. That is something that, you know, can't really be tackled easily.
Yeah.
So in terms of efficacy, if we're going to collect data efficiently in the medtech industry, we need to be aware of all of these factors and more. But I think when it comes down to it, there's a lot of people that have done this in the past. We're not doing anything new. Clinical operations have been, you know, on in the medical device industry for years and decades. And something like joining a conference or two on clinical operations within the medtech industry could spark some very great ideas on how to approach your clinical strategy and operations going forward. Because I attend these conferences like 3-4 times a year, even more. And there are so many people sharing their experiences of what went wrong, what they thought could be done better, and what they believe could, you know, be improved in terms of overall clinical strategy. So there's a lot of knowledge out there that we should utilize because we're not reinventing the wheel. You don't have to.
Sure. What about, has COVID and the pandemic caused, you know, has that pushed collection towards digital? Or, you know, like what has changed? COVID has changed so much, right? Has it changed the way clinical data is collected now in a positive, negative way, neutral?
For some companies, yes.
Okay.
And I think, you know, one of the best examples is a multi-million dollar company that we're working with that has been doing this traditionally paper-based for years. And they're located quite far away from their biggest market. And they realized that during COVID, because they couldn't travel, much of their clinical operations were kind of in a pause or stagnant for that time. So they realized that there was a need to improve that part. But there's a lot of companies still out there that, you know, believe they don't have the funds or maybe forget to think about that part of the clinical operations. You know, maybe didn't make room for that in the budget, that still try to go that the other way. But I think with the pandemic having impacted the cost of digitalization quite heavily, it's actually become a little bit cheaper to digitalize your setup. There are a lot more companies looking to do that from day one.
Okay.
I think it has had a positive effect. I'm not going to say that it has pushed it completely, but it has had a positive effect, definitely.
Yeah. And before we go, the elephant in the room, MDR, you know, I guess how has the, we know that that people are having to, companies are having to show more clinical data, which is are making, you know, folks who have maybe had legacy products on the market collect more clinical data and share yeah. that with the notified bodies. Have you seen, you know, I've heard some people when this was happening say, well, we're just pulling our product off of the market. We're not even worrying about Europe anymore. We're not doing this. And
yeah.
And it's like, okay. I mean, again, that's a business decision. I wasn't looking at the numbers. Have you seen, are people actually pulling their products off of market, or are they sucking it up and figuring out better ways to collect clinical data to share?
In my network, and yeah. with all the discussions that I've had with my peers, I have not heard of a case where that has actually happened. Sorry. I do think that most of the companies are trying to continue with their current plan as is. And because the regulation was just fully applicable from May this year, there is still some runway left for a lot of these companies, especially those that have, you know, still have their MDD certification, mm-hmm. you know, 2 years down the line. 3 years, maybe even. So a lot of the companies are probably still going to continue having their products in the market until somebody says otherwise. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I really think that it's going to go that far until somebody says otherwise, because there is simply not enough people out there to spy on every single medical device that's being used out there in the market. That it is, as it is today, it is almost impossible. It is a daunting task for a lot of the competent authorities and notified bodies. Mm-hmm. What I've heard, though, is that a lot of the companies are going to try to collaborate somehow. Because what you said is true. There is a need for more data. And that's also what I'm advocating a lot for, that people should collect a lot more data. But there is still a completely legit way to get to market in Europe through equivalence. Similar to 510K, you can still claim equivalence. The only difference between the MDR and the MDD is the fact that there's a small sentence in there in one of the appendixes that says, you just need to make sure that if notified body asks you, that you can demonstrate access to the data that you're referring to. So you could refer to a publication of a you know, similar device and all that.
Sure.
But if you don't have access to it, and that's really what's causing all the fuss. That's the reason behind the whole thing.
Okay. Interesting. I was not aware of that. So, I mean, you know, I've heard about the MDR. I've read a little bit about it, but I did not have that level of insight there. So that's really
interesting. So you can imagine, you know, companies like, you know, Medtronic, et cetera, yeah. that have a huge portfolio. They, you know, might be open to sharing revenue with a competitor. You know, maybe there's just one or two other competitors and, you know, they're willing to, you know, get 60-20-20 instead of zero,
yeah,
by collaborating, sharing data.
Yeah.
And I have heard talks of companies doing that. That is also very similar, you know, how pharmaceutical companies are doing with phase 4 studies.
Right.
Yep. A lot of the pharma companies that have the same time of active ingredient in, you know, 10 different products, they're collaborating on, you know, post-market safety studies.
Okay. Yeah. And to be clear, Jan is using Medtronic as an example, right? He's not saying that they are actually doing
no, this, exactly.
Right? Yeah, it's just an example of a strategic. I just wanted to be clear.
It's true.
You know, but okay. Look, I think that answers a lot of my questions. Is there anything that I missed that you were like, hey, we have to talk about this?
So when it comes to medical devices and data and, you know, IUDs and data, I could talk for hours.
Sure.
but I think a lot of the major points that we wanted to discuss, we've gotten around them.
Yeah.
I think if there's anything that I could, you know, leave for people as a key take, people as a key takeaway,
yep.
it would be, like you said, to include data collection and the strategy of data collection in your earliest strategy planning. Mm-hmm. So if you are a small, medium device company, that should be one of the key focus areas.
Yep. Yeah. Look, it is the one that is sometimes not hardest to justify, but hardest to get people to understand, because when you're a startup company, you're just starting out, everything that's mm-hmm. really right in front of you is like, you're like, wow, that is what I need to focus all my time on. But then there's these things that are looming out there that you have to be starting to prepare yourself for, right?
Yeah, you can exactly.
use whatever analogy you want. We've been using the running like a marathon, or there was a guy who was on the podcast, Devin Campbell, who ran from rim to rim of the Grand Canyon, right? And there's parts of that that are really, really difficult, right? Like, yeah, something insane that I can never do. But there's parts of that are more difficult, that are farther off. And while you need to focus some time here, you need to be prepared for that later on. And clinical is one of them, you know? So regulatory, reimbursement, and clinical, you know, I spend a lot of time talking about how all three of those influence each other. And regulatory mm-hmm. is right there from the beginning. Reimbursement, often right there from the beginning. And clinical, you're like, well, clinical's down the road. And it's like, I understand what you're saying, but you need to understand that what these decisions you're making in regulatory, reimbursement, commercialization now are really going to affect what you have to do here in clinical, right? And being prepared. Yeah. And being prepared for that and how you're going to collect that data is super important. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
Yeah. So, Jan, are you pretty active on LinkedIn?
Oh yeah, very much.
Okay.
So not as much as I would like to, mm-hmm. but I am fairly active.
Yeah, so I'm going to include a link to, I'll include a hyperlink in the show notes to your LinkedIn, to Smart Trials website, so people can go check that out.
And great, thanks.
Connect with you on LinkedIn. And other than that, hang on for 1 minute. We'll chat offline real quick, but I really appreciate your time today, and thanks for sharing this.
Thanks for having me, doing. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.